Wallawani, welcome to Earth Matters, environment social justice stories from Australia and around the world, produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country in Naam, Melbourne, and broadcast across this continent via the Community Radio Network.
Today, it's uplifting to bring you another Women's Climate Conversation, women coming together to activate the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Berlin Gender Action Plan, or GAP as it's known. The Berlin GAP Gender Action Plan goes for the next 9 years. It represents a historic step forward in embedding gender equality into climate action, hopefully ensuring inclusive, intersectional, and gender-responsive policies and practices. Here's the conversation host, Janet Salisbury, co-founder of the Women's Climate Congress, introducing Women Coming Together to Activate the UNFCCC Berlin Gender Action Plan.
I pay my deep respects to elders past, present and emerging, and have great gratitude for the custodianship of the land that First Nations people have shown over many millennia.
Got three wonderful speakers with us tonight. First of all, we have Fleur Newman, who is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change Unit Lead for Gender, also for Children and Youth, and for what's called Action for Climate Empowerment, or ACE. And Fleur was centrally involved in the development of the Berlin Gender Action Plan. And we also have online with us Dr. Sally Box, who is head of the international negotiations at the Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water. And in that role, she leads the Australian government negotiation team. And she's done that for a few COPs now. And she will be doing so again for COP31. And we're also joined today by Joanne Crawford, AM, who is an Australian leader in gender equality, sustainable development and gender-sensitive measurement of poverty and inequality. And she's also, for many years now, been a staff member with the International Women's Development Agency. So I'm going to start by asking each of our speakers to make a sort of introductory statement about their role and to tell us what this BLM Gender Action Plan is. What is it? What is its significance and in relation to their role? So I'm going to start with Fleur. Yes, and can you tell us, please, Fleur, about your role and what the plan is and the international perspective?
Thank you very much, Janet. The BLM Gender Action Plan. It is quite an extraordinary outcome, but one that has quite a long history too. It's the understanding of why we need to consider gender in the context of the UNFCCC started way back. You mentioned the Rio in 1992. The UNFCCC was the only one of those three treaties. There was three treaties out of that on climate, on biodiversity, and on combating desertification. And the Climate Change Convention was the only one that didn't have any reference to gender in it. And the first reference came in 2001, and it was a recognition of the overrepresentation of men in the negotiation process, and that there was a need to focus on ensuring that there was equal representation of women and men in what was, is, and continues to be something that is relevant to everyone everywhere. And so it took another 11 years before there was anything substantive on gender equality in the context of the UNFCCC. But in the meantime, and I think this is a really important point for the people here on this call, is that civil society, feminist, grassroots, women's organizations worked tirelessly to support countries in understanding why gender was relevant in this context, so that in a process that is led by country decision making, those countries could bring that topic into the conversation. And in part, this is because the focus initially in the convention was around the climate science, and for good reason. We needed to understand what it was that we're doing to the earth and why, and what we could be doing differently. However, one of the key words in the convention, and when it talks about climate change, is that these are anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions. Anthropogenic literally means caused by humans. And anytime we have anything that's caused by humans, we need to be looking at gendered aspects to that, because our society and our economies have built in systemic equality and inequality. So these are things that need to be considered, but isn't necessarily obvious when you're talking about climate science. And so, as you say, we got our first work program in 2014, but that was after we got a standing agenda item on the COP, so the Conference of the Parties. And this is important in a process that is built on agendas. Without a standing agenda item, you don't have the opportunity to talk about this every year, have countries come and discuss this as an agenda item. And so it was really important that that got onto the agenda. And then we've had a couple of different work programs. And in all of this, it's been building up to an understanding of why and what needs to be included when developing climate policy and action. So we are now at a point where we have a 9-year gender action plan, which has been built on the lessons learned from the previous 10 or so years. And there's a lot to unpack in it. And my job is to support countries in the negotiation process, but then also in the implementation of those decisions. And part of that is to help people outside of the climate process understand what's been decided at the international level.
Thank you, Claire. That's a great perspective from where we're coming from with this international gender action plan. So, Sally, I'd like to bring you in here. I know that the Australian government and your team had a lot of input into the negotiations to get this new plan finalised. So I'd just like you to speak a little bit from the Australian perspective on why this plan is important in Australia.
Thanks very much, Janet, and good evening, everybody. I'm coming to you from Ngunnawal country in Canberra, and it's a really great pleasure to be with you all. I thought I'd just try and make sort of maybe five points tonight, I think, and one that sort of Janet introduced really about why we're even talking about gender equality and climate change. And it really is, you know, well established and internationally understood that climate change has different impacts for men and women. This is due to the systemic vulnerabilities that women face, including gender roles and gender discrimination. And there are some quite confronting statistics really out there, including that, you know, women are 14 more times more likely to perish in a disaster. They represent 80% of people displaced by extreme weather. They're more disproportionately affected by climate health impacts. And we know that gender-based violence increases following climate-induced disasters. So there are lots of reasons why we need to focus on the intersection between gender and climate. I spend my time as Australia's head of delegation working with other parties in the UNFCCC and contributing to the Paris Agreement negotiations and then the implementation of the decisions that we make. Australia really advocates in our international climate negotiations to mainstream gender equality into policies, into decision-making, into finance decisions, so that climate action is appropriate to the context and that so that it addresses the needs and interests of all groups. And we also really try to continue to drive that full and equal participation of women and girls in those international climate change processes and then into our sort of domestic climate change action that helps sort of implement those international processes. And it's no coincidence that in our international development program that gender and climate really feature, and there are really strong targets for both in our international development program in recognition of the intersection between gender and climate. And happy to come back and talk a little bit about that. Just to the topic at hand, the Gender Action Plan. At COP30 last year, we were really proud to co-facilitate together with the Dominican Republic negotiations on the Gender Action Plan, the Beleng Gender Action Plan. We think this is really important because what it does is it really sets out the practical steps that we can all take to advance gender-responsive climate action. It takes the broad objectives of the Lima work program, and it really develops some specific measurable actions to advance those objectives. and also identifies the bodies responsible for implementation. Many of the activities under the Gender Action Plan form part of the work of the UNFCCC and will be led by parties and by the Secretariat, which is Fleur and her wonderful team. But other activities are led by organisations, grassroots organisations, researchers, media, journalists, financial institutions, private sector and philanthropy. So it really does seek to engage everybody. And I think what we think is really significant is it provides us a really important opportunity to advance issues like gender responsive climate policies, data and evidence to support better policy making. It'll help us advance issues like gender responsive climate finance and also women's leadership and participation in international climate processes, but also domestic as well. The Gender Action Plan doesn't set sort of binding obligations on parties. It doesn't guarantee sufficient funding, and it doesn't sort of set particular participation targets, but it is really sort of informative and direction setting for parties and sets out that challenge to us all and a call to us all. Just two more points. I think just generally under the UNFCCC, gender isn't sort of a standalone sort of reporting pillar, but parties are really expected to integrate and report on gender in their nationally determined contributions, which is where we put forward our emissions reduction target and set out our policies for how we propose to go about achieving them. And also in our transparency report, which is our reporting on how we're going against our own targets. Progress, you know, is slowly being made, but pleasingly, I think 85% of parties reference gender in their latest reports and communications, their nationally determined contributions, national adaptation plans, their long-term strategies. Documents like the Gender Action Plan are really helping show the way for how parties can better integrate gender into their policies and into their reporting. And the last point I'll make is that many of you will know that Australia has a particular role in this year's COP as the president of the negotiations. So while the COP will be hosted in Turkey, Australia has a role in leading the negotiations. And in this leadership role, we're really keen and committed to trying to strengthen meaningful and diverse participation in all of the UNFCCC processes and, you know, through things like submissions, through observer engagement. So this is a really wonderful opportunity for us to bring our values to the COP this year and really encourage their parties to encourage their diverse participation, but also to look at how we can involve diverse groups in the climate process this year. And happy to talk a little bit more about that later, but I'll stop there. Thanks so much, Janet.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Sally Box, Head of International Negotiations at Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water. She was online with the Women's Climate Conversation, women coming together to activate the UNFCCC Belem Gender Action Plan. You're listening to Earth Matters, broadcast nationally across this continent via the Community Radio Network. Let's hear the next part of this conversation.
Thanks very much, Sally. Yeah, so I'm just going to turn to Joe. First of all, I just would like you to bring, because you've had a really long career in this area, gender equality, and you bring a really strong civil society perspective to this conversation. So I'd just like you to bring us in on that basis, you know, of what this means for civil society.
Civil society. Yeah. Thanks so much, Janet. And so I want to start by providing a few general reflections on the role of the feminist civil society in change work generally, and then come to the Belem Gender Action Plan and some of the ways that civil society are supporting implementation. Just for a little bit of sort of theory context, the work of Laura Weldon, Forrester, Luscardi and Kelly Thompson in 2023 on the Feminist Mobilisation Index, looking across the period from 1975 to 2015, found that what makes most difference in change towards gender equality over time and across contexts is autonomous women's movements. So movements articulate women's perspectives, they transform public opinion, they insert issues into public and policy agendas and resist rollbacks. So feminist civil society organisations as part of that process play a really vital structuring and connecting role in change processes, enabling and focusing individual efforts and the long-term commitment that's essential for sustained systemic work. Feminist civil society contributes to change in some key ways at the level of ideas by naming silences or gaps in knowledge or gender insensitive approaches that could and should be overcome and identifying research priorities and prioritising resourcing, contributing to research and policy advocacy and change in environment and climate and other areas more generally. They help create the political space for change, often working with others as coalitions, alliances, or networks to progress ideas and priorities towards more fundamental change, creating a context that enables other actors and power holders to move earlier or go faster and support and sustain momentum and focus so that those actors are able to commit attention and resources over time. And then to do the technical monitoring and political work that's essential to accountability. So commitments being implemented. Feminist civil society, I think, often plays a really important connecting role too between levels of change work. So bringing knowledge of local contexts and communities to the table, supporting women in their diversity, gender diverse people, including people facing multiple and overlapping barriers to be heard and for their voices to be considered as part of the process, providing transformative alternatives to mainstream thinking and initiatives, and expanding the kind of option sets in the political space that is there. They contribute to collective action and change through movements and networks and create an enabling environment that helps keep that attention focused. So there's a long history, I think, from feminist civil society of working in multi-stakeholder arrangements that leverage the sort of different roles, contributions and capacities that actors can bring towards maximising change. And I think a really important point to think about as we're looking at bringing the Belem Gender Action Plan into national contexts is that when change goals and priorities are set with other actors that recognise the different roles that players can bring, they provide a framework for acting more comprehensively and in aligned ways. And the Belem Action Plan really recognises that and is an example of what is possible in the actions that it articulates, but also as a result of the work of decades of feminist organising and activism in multilateral spaces that have worked to really advance gender and climate justice and sowing seeds of resistance, centering collaboration and care in work to create really thriving futures for people and planet, and also in collaborating across institutional types. So what we've got now is a platform for advancing gender equality and for really effective and inclusive climate action that's rooted in justice, care and transformation, and that recognises really the need to act at global and national levels. The gap, I think, and something that is particularly important from the perspective of the day job that I have working on more inclusive data, is it confirms the importance of gender data for planning and implementing gender and age responsive climate policies and monitoring and reporting on progress. And working to realise and support this work is some of the engagement that I do with the Equality Insights team and the Institute for Sustainable Futures at the University of Sydney. And we're really working to support and resource the Australian government with specialist knowledge on individual level data that helps to reveal the differential impacts of a changing climate, but also to make that kind of knowledge available to civil society to use in pushing and urging government to go further faster.
Yeah.
We'll be supporting those conversations in the lead up to Bonn in June and towards COP31, working to really encourage the Australian government to bring together and maximise the moment, bring together its leadership on inclusive data, climate action and gender equality. And I think globally, the work of feminist organisations is that, you know, we really do need to be working together at multiple levels. And so networks such as the Gender and Environment Data Alliance, a global alliance working to expand the availability and use of gender data, is really critical.
Thanks, Jo. That's really great. Yes, I was going to sort of carry on now a little bit with something a bit more about how we can implement this plan. In the online report from WEDO, that's the Women's Environment Development Organisation I mentioned earlier, they say the gap is not revolutionary on its own. It will not dismantle the fossil fuel regime or uproot patriarchy overnight, but it remains a vital tool to make gender equality central, not peripheral to climate action. When designed with coherence, accountability and ambition, the gap could move us from commitments to collective implementation to measurable impact for people and planet. I'm just going to bring back in Fleur. So I'm just going to go back to you, Fleur, in a minute, thinking about implementation. So what would be, I suppose I want thinking about what the most game-changing sort of ways are there that we can activate this plan, maybe thinking about in Australia, but internationally as well. Just to mention that a piece of work that the Women's Climate Congress has been doing is to work with women in Parliament to try and encourage them to work together, to sort of put aside party political, to come together as a multi-party group to look at this whole issue, the climate change through a gender lens, and to bring that input from their electorates into the discussion at that parliamentary level. But that's just one way. But maybe you could just talk through a little bit some of the things, looking at some of those pillars of how is the best way to bring this plan to life.
Thank you. And listening to both Sally and Joe, I think it's already obvious that having a plan can be very helpful in creating areas of focus. And one of the reasons there's five priority areas under the action plan is because these are areas that are known to need focus in order for us to be able to move things forward. I will select one. There are 27 activities and 98 deliverables over the 9 years. So one of those activities is something that is due next year, which is national assessments on the intersection of gender, climate in the context of health, gender-based violence and the care economy. And this is a new element in the BLM Gender Action Plan. Not a new element in climate policy and action, just one that hasn't necessarily been recognised as being central. And yet we know, and that has come out in both Sally and Joe's presentations, that these are issues that once they're addressed, and when you look at it from a climate lens as well, you can see that the connections. And in Australia in particular, I think this is come out clearly in responses to things like the fires and to floods and to extreme weather events. The care economy is at the centre of responses to that. And so we do need to be looking at that as something that needs to be incorporated in climate policy and action more systematically. And the other thing about the care, health and gender-based violence elements is that women and feminist organisations working on gender equality are often looking at issues of care, health and gender-based violence, but they're not necessarily applying a climate lens and don't necessarily make the connection of their work in these areas and what needs to be done on climate policy and action. So that this is also an opportunity to bring together communities who are perhaps working on these things in different ways and have, to Joe's point about data, have data that is relevant but is perhaps not being used in government policy and action because the connections aren't being made. So this is another piece of this, is bringing together those who are working in this in different ways so that we can have a more comprehensive addressing of these issues. But on top of all of that is also an opportunity for having conversations that haven't been had before in places that they haven't. And I think this is one of those opportunities.
That's Fleur Newman, who is the UNFCCC Unit Lead for Gender, Children and Youth and ACE, Action for Climate Empowerment. And she was centrally involved in the development of the BLM Action Plan. Trying to get a nutshell response, I asked the question, if you were in an elevator, just going up 15 floors, and a stranger asked you, what does gender equality have to do with carbon dioxide emissions? What would you say? Sally Box said,
well, CO2 emissions cause climate change. Climate change disproportionately affects women and girls. So climate change is a challenge to our aspiration for gender equality. If we're going to address climate change effectively, we will only do so if everybody is involved in developing the policies and the actions to tackle it, which means the full participation of women and girls in developing our policies.
Fleur Newman responded,
I would simply say that it's human-caused carbon emissions, and humans are made up of a lot of individuals, and we need to take everybody's different perspectives into account.
And Joanne Crawford's nutshell was:
I've just pasted a little image in the chat, which is just like a snapshot from the work that we did in Tonga with the Tonga Statistics Department about why understanding these issues from a gender perspective really matters, because people live different economic and social lives. And while we may be working on that in other areas of our gender equality work, I think it's really vital to see the ways in which there is this interaction between different aspects of life. And if we are not seeing gender when we're doing this work, then we are not understanding the complexity and multiplicity of impacts.
That's Joanna Crawford giving a short answer to the question, what does gender have to do with CO2 emissions? And how would you answer that question? And how do you suggest we reduce our CO2 emissions? And what's the next thing that you can do towards that aim? Thank you to the Women's Climate Congress and all speakers for this discussion. To hear the remainder of this conversation, go to the Women's Climate Congress website at womensclimatecongress.com. You can also join the Women's Climate Congress and their other activities and hear more Women's Climate Conversations. The one that we have just heard underscored that the BELEAM Gender Action Plan is a crucial tool for centering gender equality in climate action. While significant progress has been made, effective implementation demands robust policy coherence, deep consultation, including government actively reaching out to women, nuanced data collection and sharing, sustained investment in feminist civil society, and bold commitment to both adaptation and mitigation efforts. Australia, as president of upcoming COP31 negotiation, has a unique opportunity to champion these integrated approaches on the global stage and domestically. I'm Earth Matters show host, Beck Horridge.
You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environment Justice Program. If you've missed any of today's show, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country. If you'd like to get in contact, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page. Thank you.